Welcome to Acatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Acatra AI. Hello and welcome. Today we're doing a deep dive into Douglas Stewart's Booker Prize-winning novel, Shuggie Bain. And this really isn't just a book, is it? It's this incredibly raw, tender, but often brutal exploration of love, addiction, and survival. It's resonated profoundly with readers.
It really has.
Douglas Stewart's own background feels so present in the narrative. He's Scottish-American, and his experiences growing up in 1980s Glasgow, specifically as the queer son of a single mother who struggled with alcoholism.
Yeah.
That's the heart of it.
Wow.
And the setting, Thatcher-era Glasgow. It's just bleak. Deindustrialization, unemployment everywhere, social decay. Stewart paints this landscape so vividly, it practically becomes another character.
Absolutely. And it's against that really grim backdrop that we get this heartbreaking story of Shuggie and Agnes. At its core, Shuggie Bain is about that bond.
Yeah.
Fierce, incredibly complicated, and ultimately, well, tragic, between young, sensitive Shuggie and his mother, Agnes, who's battling alcoholism.
Yeah.
And the book, it doesn't pull any punches. It asks some really profound, quite unsettling questions, you know? It makes you think, can love actually be destructive?
Right.
How far should devotion go when it starts, you know, consuming the person giving it? And maybe the toughest one, what's the real cost of trying to save someone who might not actually want saving?
That's such a powerful way to put it. It really gets to that agonizing core of loyalty and its limits.
Mm-hmm.
And Stewart's own story, getting to this point, is pretty remarkable too. From that background in Glasgow, the poverty he writes about, then a whole career in fashion design in New York.
Quite the shift.
Yeah, exactly. And then becoming this celebrated novelist, his whole philosophy seems rooted in giving voice to the voiceless, doesn't it? People marginalized by class or sexuality or just circumstance.
Right.
And he manages this incredible balance, like completely unflinching realism about poverty, but also this deep, deep compassion. He never romanticizes it. How did critics respond to that?
Oh, spectacularly. It came out in 2020, got immediate acclaim, and then won the Booker Prize that same year. Just shot straight into the modern classic category.
Wow.
And you can definitely call it a Bildungsroman, you know, a coming-of-age story. But it's also powerful social realism. It fits right into that tradition of Scottish urban realism. Think Irvine Welsh, James Kelman.
Sure.
But Stewart brings this unique LGBTQ+ perspective, which adds such a vital, often missing layer to those kinds of narratives. And actually, its themes of resilience, love, survival, they really hit home for people during uncertain times like the pandemic.
Oh.
Give it a kind of universal resonance.
Let's really immerse ourselves in that setting then.
Right.
1980s Glasgow. The industrial heartlands being dismantled, communities just devastated, working class families barely hanging on.
Mm.
And into this world steps Hugh Shuggie Bain, this sensitive, almost effeminate boy just trying to survive. He's caught, isn't he,
mm-hmm.
between this desperate love for his mother, Agnes.
Yeah.
And a world that seems to have absolutely no place for a boy like him.
And that's the central conflict, isn't it? It's heartbreaking. Shuggie is a child, obviously, but he's forced into being a caretaker, too. He's
right.
constantly torn between, you know, just growing up, being a kid, and this overwhelming need he feels to protect his mother.
And Agnes herself.
Yeah.
She's such a complex character.
Oh, incredibly. Victim and perpetrator, like you said. Her alcoholism just destroys the family piece by piece, yet Stewart makes her so tragic. This woman with immense pride, former beauty, trying to hold on, but fighting this losing battle. Against addiction, yes, but also against a society that's basically abandoned her. Their relationship is the engine of the novel. This intense mix of devotion and, well, destruction.
That dynamic is definitely what hooks you. Let's dig into the characters a bit more. Shuggie Bain first. He's the protagonist, the moral center, you could argue.
I think so.
His sensitivity, his artistic side, his emerging gay identity, all of it clashes so hard with that hyper-masculine, hostile Glasgow environment. What's his journey like? His arc?
It's a really painful awakening, I think. He starts out just full of this unconditional love, convinced he can save her if he just loves her enough, tries hard enough.
Yeah, the innocence of that.
Exactly. But through the relentless bullying he faces and Agnes's addiction just spiraling, he slowly, agonizingly starts to realize something. That loving someone doesn't mean you have to completely sacrifice yourself for them.
A hard lesson for a child.
Incredibly hard. He moves from that pure devotion to this necessary, scarred understanding of self-preservation. He learns that sometimes survival means letting go, which is an almost impossible thing for a kid to process.
And Agnes, you described her as magnetic, tragic, flawed. that pride, that aspiration. It's so tangible. Trying to keep up appearances with her perfect false teeth, her mink coat.
Mm-hmm. It's like armor, isn't it?
Yeah. Armor against the grim reality.
Mm.
Can you trace that downward spiral for us?
Stewart portrays her fall with such empathy, I find. That meticulous appearance. It's her last hold on self-worth as everything else just crumbles around her.
Right.
But it's a losing fight. Her addiction gets worse, fueled by isolation, by dashed hopes. And it transforms her. She's still a victim of her circumstances, definitely. But she also becomes capable of real cruelty towards the people she loves most.
Mm-hmm.
Her alcoholism isn't just presented as a personal failing, you know? It feels like a response to being abandoned by society, by her husband. It's an indictment of a system that just lets people fall.
And speaking of abandonment, Hugh Shugbean Sr., the father, selfish, unfaithful taxi driver, he really feels like a catalyst for the family's destruction, doesn't he?
Oh, completely. His walking out on them in Pithead, it's not just a plot point. It embodies that toxic masculinity, that total failure of responsibility.
How do the other kids, Catherine and Leek, cope with all this chaos?
They have different strategies, different escape routes, really. Catherine, the eldest, she's pragmatic, hardened. Her focus is just getting out.
Self-preservation.
Pure self-preservation. Early marriage, emigrating to South Africa. It underlines how impossible it was for that family unit to survive intact.
And Leek, the older brother.
Alexander, yeah, Leek.
He's quieter, artistic, but deeply scarred. He tries to survive by retreating into his art, you know. But even that isn't safe. Agnes sells his prized possessions for drink money. And that's the final straw for him. He leaves. And his departure is huge because it leaves Shuggy completely, utterly alone in that caretaker role. God, that isolation. Let's track the plot itself then. That relentless cycle of hope and despair. It starts cleverly, doesn't it? With 16-year-old Shuggy in 92. Alone, but resilient.
Yeah, it sets the tragic tone right away. You know where it's heading, broadly. Then it flashes back to 1981.
Where do we find the Baines initially?
We're in part one, Sight Hill, 1981. The family's all crammed into a Glasgow tenement. Agnes is trying to keep up that glamorous facade despite the drinking. Shug Sr.'s affairs are common knowledge.
A precarious situation.
Very. And it leads to them being forced to move out to Pithead, a desolate mining town. And for Agnes's spirit, her sense of self, it's described as basically a death sentence. It just shatters her illusions.
Pithead sounds grim. How does that environment make things worse for Agnes and the family?
Oh, it absolutely amplifies everything. Pithead, from 82 onwards, it's the crucible, a wasteland, really. Unemployment, despair. A Shug Sr. uses the move as his excuse to just disappear.
Right, abandons them.
Completely. Catherine finds her way out. Leek retreats inwards. But Shuggy, he's too young, too devoted. He becomes Agnes's shadow, her caretaker.
And he's facing his own struggles, too.
Constantly. Relentless bullying at school. Called No Right because he's seen as effeminate, gentle. It just adds another layer of isolation to his already heavy burden.
It's almost unbearable to think about. But there is that period, isn't there, where Agnes tries sobriety, a glimmer of hope.
Yes, a really pivotal point. She makes a real effort, goes to AA, starts seeing Eugene, another taxi driver. And for about a year, there's this fragile peace.
A sense of normalcy.
Exactly. Something Shuggy desperately craves. But the relationship is shaky, and then there's this disastrous dinner party. Agnes relapses very publicly, humiliatingly.
Oh, God.
Eugene leaves her. Huh. And the shame, the failure, it just crushes her, sends her into her worst spiral yet. It's a brutal depiction of that false hope phenomenon in addiction. Leaves them both more broken.
That relapse scene is just gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And it leads to another fracture, doesn't it? Leek leaving home.
Yeah. After that relapse, things get even worse. Leek had stuck around longer than Catherine, but the final straw is Agnes selling his few treasured art supplies, his escape.
For drink money.
For drink money. It's a betrayal of his solace, his identity. So he leaves, and that's devastating for Shuggy. Now he's truly the only one left.
The sole guardian.
Mm-hmm. And the following years are just this harrowing portrayal of their codependent life. Shuggy's immense sacrifices, that toxic dance of love and resentment. It's incredibly intimate and damaging.
So where does that leave them? Part three takes us to the East End and back to 1992.
Right. They move again, another housing scheme. Agnes is just a shadow of herself by now. The alcohol has ravaged her looks, her spirit. She's lost her pride, her connections.
And her end is quiet.
Tragically quiet. After drinking, she basically chokes on her own saliva and dies alone in her bed. Shuggy, who's 15 by then, finds her. His whole world built around her just collapses.
But he survives.
He survives. That's the key. The resolution isn't neat, but it finds Shuggy as a survivor. There's a final scene, quite hopeful actually, where he connects with Leanne, a girl from work. He's dancing with her friends in a public fountain.
A release.
A profound sense of release, yeah. A glimmer of hope. Like maybe, just maybe, he'll finally get a chance to figure out who he is, separate from his mother's shadow. Finally free.
What a journey. Puts him through the absolute ringer. So stepping back, what are the bigger themes Stuart is tackling here, beyond the personal story? There's a clear critique of Thatcher-era policies.
Oh, definitely. It's a searing indictment. Stuart shows you exactly how those policies decimated working-class communities. It wasn't just about job losses. It was the stripping away of dignity, opportunity, hope.
Mm.
And you see how that economic abandonment fuels the despair, the addiction, Agnes's struggles, the kids' desperation to escape. It's all tied to the collapse of their social safety nets. It makes it clear. Poverty isn't just an individual failing. It's often societal.
And what about Shuggy's own identity, his sexuality?
That's explored powerfully, too. His journey towards understanding his sexuality happens in this environment where, as the book puts it, difference equals danger. It really highlights that brutal intersection of class and nascent queerness in working-class Glasgow. There was no space for him to be different.
Connecting that back, the novel is so insightful about addiction as a family disease, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not a moral failing, but an illness that poisons the whole system.
Exactly. And it brilliantly shows the mechanics of codependency, how Shuggy's care, born of love, inadvertently enables Agnes.
Right.
It makes you question the very nature of love and loyalty in that context. When does devotion become destructive? Is it care or enabling? Or, as Agnes herself wonders, is love sometimes just a lie you told yourself when you were afraid to be alone?
That line is devastating. It really makes you rethink what helping truly means. I was also struck by the theme of dignity, how they fight to keep it.
Mm-hmm. In degrading circumstances, Agnes's appearance, Shuggy's insistence on cleanliness, they become these small but significant acts of resistance, ways of saying, I still matter.
Yeah. Quiet defiance.
Which leads, I think, to resilience and survival. Despite all the bleakness, and it is bleak, the novel is ultimately this testament to the human spirit's capacity to endure. Shuggy's survival, scarred as he is, feels like a victory in itself, finding strength even in vulnerability.
Let's talk about the crafts for a moment. Stuart's narrative style.
Yeah.
He uses that third-person limited omniscient perspective, right?
Yeah.
Shifting between Shuggy and Agnes.
Yes. And it's crucial. It lets you inside both their heads. You feel Shuggy's innocent burden, and you understand Agnes's tortured pride and pain even when she's acting terribly. It builds incredible empathy.
And the symbolism, you mentioned the armor earlier.
Right, the false teeth, that fragile pride, the public face, the mink coat, her symbol of a lost glamorous dream, her armor, the minor strike constantly in the background representing that wider societal decay, and those slag heaps in Pithead.
Yeah.
A stark visual metaphor for entrapment, for how the community itself has been discarded.
And the language.
Yeah.
It feels so authentic, so visceral.
It really is. Stuart's prose, it's this amazing mix. Lyrical one moment, brutal the next, often in the same sentence. It's so sensory, you can almost smell the stale beer, feel the damp cold, and the use of Glaswegian dialect and slang. It's not just for show. It immerses you completely, gives the characters such realness, such dignity in their own voices. It's like poetry forged in hardship.
There's so many lines that just stick with you. I keep thinking of Shuggy's realization. It was funny how much brighter the world was when you weren't constantly afraid.
Oh, that one hits hard, captures the anxiety perfectly.
And that devastating summary of their bond. She was his mother, and she was magnificent. She was also dying, and she was taking him with her. Just encapsulates the whole tragedy.
It really does. Another one for me is how Shuggy sees Agnes. She was the weather. Shuggy knew the placid moods and the storm fronts, the fleeting sunshine and the dense rolling fog.
Wow. Shows his hyper-awareness, his premature maturity.
Exactly. And then there's that constant refrain, that brutal accusation, you're no right, defining Shuggy's otherness, his queerness in that rigid world. And finally, that line about their relationship. He was her secret and she was his. It highlights that intense, insular, codependent world they built, cutting them off from help.
Reading it is, well, it's an intense emotional experience, often grueling.
Yeah.
You feel heartbroken, but also kind of inspired by the end. Devastated by the suffering, but moved by the resilience.
Yeah, it stays with you. It forces you to confront uncomfortable truths about addiction, poverty, family, society. No easy answers.
It generates such lasting empathy, though. humanizes Agnes, shines a light on kids like Shuggy, the hidden carers. It really can shift your perspective on love, duty, and how society feels people.
Absolutely. Shuggy's survival, despite everything, feels monumental. A quiet triumph, even with the scars.
Shuggy Ben really stands as this powerful testament to the human spirit's endurance, turning such personal trauma into something universally resonant.
And it's so crucial in amplifying those marginalized voices, fostering empathy for struggles that, sadly, are still all too real in our world.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.